You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Today's episode is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Billy, if you could Slack me the link to the gel that makes my pee, this gelatinous thing that I can carry to one of the trash cans, I'd appreciate that.
I'll send it to you. Did you guys ever see Envy?
The
Jack Black.
Yeah, isn't there like a spray that they
poopery?
Yeah,
where he sprays poo and then like
We have that in our bathrooms here.
Well, yeah, but this one makes poop disappear. That's what you spray into the toilet.
The smell of the poop.
Smell better.
Okay. But we have the actual brand.
No, my bad. That's actually called poopery.
Yeah.
Vaporize was the thing in the movie.
Vaporize.
Cam Newton's apologized for his involvement in the fight.
How'd you experience that as your friend was being ganged up on?
I felt bad that I wasn't there with him, to be honest with you, to try to help him fend off some of the people.
Now, it was a sucker punch. From the videos that I had seen, and still, even though as someone that was receiving the sucker punch, he was still trying to break up a fight that he found himself in the middle of, and the hat stayed on the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen this whole thing. There's two videos. I saw the first one where he was just kind of apologizing for his involvement, saying there's too many people depending on him, that he can't, say, be the bigger person and then be involved in something like that. And then there's another one that I haven't seen yet. But I mean, if you listen to the involvement of the fight, it appears he was kind of talking some crap, which seems normal, I would think, in like most sporting events. But the people that he got in a fight with didn't appreciate how far he was going, I guess. I don't know.
This fight actually didn't come as a surprise. I've been following. I'm on some weird Cam Newton algorithm, and he had been beefing with 7-on-7 teams out there. There were videos in the days leading up to this. This built to crescendo, where you knew that there was beef. But that appeared to be a sucker punch. But the most impressive part about that video is, number one, Cam Newton, huge. Just not someone...
Confirmed.
He's a big boy. To make the choice, it's no wonder why several people went at Cam Newton, because he's the greatest goal line threat in the history of the sport for a reason. That's a big guy. And the hat just makes him seem even more big and tough. There's no bringing him down. But he's apologized. I saw that video, and granted, I don't know what's really going on here outside of the videos that framed some of this stuff. I don't really see anything for him to apologize for other than an example. There's children that are fans of his. He is in a leadership position at 7v7 fields, but nothing really to apologize for. The other people should apologize.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen the second video yet, so I don't know exactly.
Did you let him know that you're there and you got his back if that ever happens on here?
It's one of those things that, like, you kind of you want to give them some space. You know what I mean? Like, you, when a friend's going through, you want to be supportive, but also, like, from a distance, because you want to pile on and have them feel like, you know. So, like, publicly, I'd like to say that I support Cam and I'm there for him and all that, but I don't want to bother him because I'm sure he's really going through it right now with a lot of people. Like, me, personally, like, my closest friends, I'll check in with, like, twice a year, and we're good. And I feel like they feel the same way about me.
They're
like,
salute Peter King? Hey,
good?
Hell of a run.
Alive? Yeah, good.
Peter,
okay,
Peter, hell of a run.
Holy crapola.
Yeah.
I
got caught up in the Peter King thing where he was, who was it that he said that he looked like? He said that he looked like, he's like, oh, I feel like Clint Eastwood or something like that. I'm like, yeah, you look like him too. And like you gave me that exact same look when I said it. And I didn't realize, like, at the time he was talking about like an 80-year-old Clint Eastwood. And I'm like, yeah, that wasn't the nicest thing to say.
They don't really look that.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to compliment him because
Clint Eastwood. Dude,
everyone talks about how old Clint Eastwood looks. Yeah. Like,
I know, but
thing.
I didn't. I was thinking young Clint Eastwood.
He specifically said Gran Torino.
I wasn't listening
to frame the conversation.
Okay.
It wasn't Dirty Harry. Clint Eastwood.
I hear about 40% of what happens, if that. So I just am like, yeah, that's a that. I just try to agree with people.
Well, here
you know
comes
what I
one
mean?
Of those 60% conversations because I want to close the loop on Formula One. I happen to think that Formula One was this like shell corporation and just a whole Ponzi scheme. And it was inflated because of the pandemic. And everyone during lockdown was looking for content and they found it in Drive to Survive. And it's become a template. We work at a media company, and I receive at least 3 Drive to Survive inspired templates.
Oh,
as
and
pitches.
They've replicated it with tennis, golf, NASCAR. Like, they're making Drive to Survive spinoffs of like every other sport.
Right. They've all, which is, it's curious that Drive to Survive becomes a template because this is Hard Knocks, but no one's really replicated the success of Drive to Survive since. Full Swing was, I enjoyed some of those episodes on Netflix. I know it's back for season 2, but I don't even think Drive to Survive has replicated the success of Drive to Survive. And Formula One, it was really peaking. It was fastest growing sport. We've heard that in this country with motorsports before. And that it's usually not a great thing when you're called the fastest growing sports because it's unsustainable and you're going from a place that's very low. This is a bit of a niche attraction. Formula One, a lot of excitement down here for the first Grand Prix. Second Grand Prix, not so much.
But they did have higher attendance, apparently, the second year.
The second year?
In Miami. The attendance has been good, actually very good at all the American races. They added the Vegas race last year, which was a flop for a number of reasons.
Was that well attended?
Yes. Apparently, it was. They said there were over 300,000 people throughout the weekend, I believe.
Vegas hated it.
Yes,
oh, the people
correct.
From Vegas hated it. That's hated. All they could talk about when
and
we were there.
As
the
drivers, hated they hated it.
Dude, as someone that visited Vegas like maybe 3 times prior to as they were doing construction, I hated it. I hated this race because it's the strip and they're doing...
I didn't watch it because it was at 1 a.m. And the qualifying ended at like 5 a.m. Eastern because they had that manhole cover issue the first night.
I'm familiar, but it seems as though Formula One got one over on us. And I know you host a Formula One show, but it's really tailed off.
I haven't gotten that sense. I feel like it's not like growing as much anymore. Like, you don't meet people that are like, oh my God, I just started watching. Like, but I do think that people that are still following it are going to stick around. Like, they're here to stay. Like, our audience for DNF has done very well. I haven't really seen much of a tail off in that, at least. The TV ratings have been really good. And again, like, it's a good product to watch on TV because it's short. It's 2 hours on a Sunday morning when a lot of times in the States, in Eastern time, there's not a lot else on, really. So it hasn't really, like, I don't think it's flopped as much, but again, okay. Like, it's hard to really tell because attendance is good, ratings are good, like our ratings have been has solid on our podcast, but I can't really tell like how many new people are getting into it. If that's the metric, then maybe that is not great.
What I'm doing is I'm approaching this from a very naive place. I just don't hear as many people talking about this, and it hasn't really captured the discourse the way that it used to. But I've got 5 minutes left in this show, and I really want to get into.
I was worried that we were not going to get to what I.
I'm going
to
try to squeeze. I'm going to try to squeeze it in, but I know that we have to hit this. All right, bring John Reed in real quick because John Reed alleged in a pre-show meeting that he invented something and he hasn't reaped any of the rewards for it. I'll let John Reed speak to exactly what he claims he invented. And
you're positioning this all wrong. That saying he claims he invented as though he did not.
Well, I'll let the audience be the judge, but John...
It's the selfie stick.
Well, Chris.
Yes, the selfie stick along with the first gimbal for the iPhone.
Okay. All right.
I invented it, I would say, around 2010.
No, I'm not going to let you reverse engineer a gimbal here, because you were calling it a selfie stick all meeting long, and then we saw the evidence in question, and then we told you it's a gimbal, and now you're making this an iPhone gimbal.
I invented the selfie stick first. I just didn't have the prototype ready.
That's
all right,
true.
So let's. I'm going to let you toss to this video. It's a minute long, so keep that in mind. Your claims of inventing the selfie stick was it was a practical application. You were in New York, and random people came up to you, or at least you thought random people came up to you. What are we about to see here?
Times Square. Let's just run the video.
This is the invention of the selfie stick.
This is the first video with the selfie stick gimbal that you invented.
The prototype.
The prototype video.
All right, right now I'm standing in the middle of Times Square looking at the first prototype for the jump rig, exclusive iPhone. As you can see, iPhone right here in motion all day long. Of course, I have a light on it.
Hey, I
beautiful
man,
light.
I know you are. Hey.
How you doing?
Light on it, man.
Tom Green.
Of course you got a light. Absolutely. Yeah, we got to calm down
here. What do you think about my iPhone?
I like it. I was walking by. You got a steady cam in your iPhone. I had to stop and say something. This is incredible. What's going on, man?
We getting money. You don't know about it. They call me the V. We winning, baby. I'm playing around with my man, and we winning, baby. You know what it is. Daddy, would you like some sausage? Woo! Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausage?
Do it.
Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausages? I'm getting sausages.
Yeah, you know, I take pride in my inventions, man. That's just one of many.
All right, John.
Wait, hold on.
Couple questions. Number one, that's not a stick. That is not a stick.
It's better than a selfie stick. It's a gimbal.
It's true.
I just want the listening audience to know that.
You called it a selfie stick.
Just before we get into the nuts and bolts, Tom Green stumbled. If you didn't tell by voice or by us saying it, Tom Green, the Tom Green, was in that video, just stumbled upon John in New York.
That's my favorite part about the video, because you have graphics that put up Tom Green's Twitter handle, but we discovered that when this person approached you, you had no idea who he was.
I had no clue.
You had no idea that Tom Green came up to you.
Or Daddy, did you like my sausage? I didn't know that was a real song from a movie.
My sausage. Whatever. I like some sausage.
I'm clueless, man.
Yeah.
So Tom Green comes up to you as you invent this. You called it a selfie stick, and then we correctly told you.
I walked it back.
It was a gimbal. We found out that the selfie stick was invented 7 years before you thought you invented the selfie stick, which your invention was not a stick.
Yeah, it was a Motorola. Listen, nothing counts unless it's an Apple. Was it 2010 when FaceTime came out, iPhone 4? That's what only counts.
This
right?
is not an Apple Android thing. Like that's not a stick.
The video pans a little. There's someone in Times Square with a selfie stick behind you.
No way.
You don't think so?
A telescopic extender for compact handheld cameras was patented by Yuida Hiroshi and Mima Yujiro in 1983.
The point is, none of this stuff was for sale. None of it was available, so I got creative, all right?
Was yours?
Listen, you guys...
I'm impressed, man.
It could have been.
I'm not out here trying to invent stuff on the street. Like, I'm out here with the prototype. Like, he said prototype. Look, at least at the time, he thought he was inventing something.
I could be living next to Jeff Bezos on South Beach if it wasn't them stealing my idea. But here I am, you know, producing
for
you guys.
Well, what do we
do? I'm happy to be here.
Let's sue someone.
It's a fancy hanger.
Who do we sue?
There was a...
At Sharp Dressed.
John's done.
It didn't even...
oh, man.
It wasn't even super practical. It's...
that's just a prototype.
That's true.
It was just hilarious in our pre-show meeting when John's just like, I invented the selfie stick.
And
I believe
what
are you
him.
Talking
no,
about?
No, look. I mean, he did. It's right there.
It's not even extending it. The whole thing with a selfie stick is you can go far away.
Well, that's just less convenient.
Guys, that's just a prototype. Like, look, if you go back and you watch Shark Tank when Ring.com was on or whatever, before it was Ring and it was something else, it was like a massive thing.
But
that's what it looks like. And then you have version 2 and version 3, and then it, you know, gets smaller and more functional.
What do I engineer here?
But it's not extending the camera.
If Billy is supporting you, tread lightly.
What?
For that reason, I am out.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
You are very comfortable talking about how you met your wife, how much you love her, how important she is to you, and that's the reason that I asked the question. I've always admired that about you, that you have no problems whatsoever professing your love.
Well, the thing is, I got a new wife now. You know, me and Bianca didn't make it. So I moved on. We moved on. It was for the better. Both of us.
Stugatz.
Things just got a little awkward there. So let me be the first on this show to congratulate you on the new wife, Vince. Congratulations on feeling whole, feeling complete, you know? Let's talk tailgating. Yeah.
Don't feel awkward, buddy. You know,
Dan, no, I do. Don't.
No, it's
I mean,
too
Dan
late for
does.
That. It's
I
much
mean,
too
Dan,
late for that, Vince. I appreciate you soothing me in this regard, but I already feel terribly awkward. And then my teammate comes to my defense with not a question, but just a healthy congratulations and the further pointing out of that awkwardness, because he's always good for me in those spots. I'm also thinking of divorce, Vince, after many, many years, 18 years, with a partner who does things like that to you.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
Tamar, it is nice to see you. I'm happy to talk to you. And if they're not telling you this as you make the rounds on some of what you are doing, you are a brave soul, sir, getting out there with your feelings and your vulnerabilities and, you know, being somebody who's leading at a time that it can be hard to vocalize your thoughts. So thank you for the work you do, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will tell the audience, he's a six-time All-Star. He's the king of the mid-range. He's a superstar forward for the Chicago Bulls, one of the best players in Raptors history. And what I'm complimenting him on is the work that he's been doing on mental health. He was one of the leading pioneers in basketball, talking about it at a time we all felt a little bit tested. And he's got a new series about mental health on his YouTube channel. It's called Dinners with DeMar. He talks to Draymond Green, Dwayne Wade, Damian Lillard. And I saw a clip of Draymond talking. He had he had to be talked into 1,000 times. Go talk to somebody. Get some tools. Can you explain to me, please? And thank you for joining us. Can you explain to me why Draymond would be so reluctant to be introspective when Draymond's a person who's always trying to get better? Why wouldn't he try to get better there?
I think we all deal with that to some type of extent, you know, it could be with anything, you know. Sometimes I know somebody who didn't feel like they needed help with cooking, you know. Any little help is always needed, and sometimes you have that pushback, and sometimes you need that right person to kind of just give you the insight on how to approach it, you know. And Draymond being a good friend of mine, me feeling like I've been through, you know, the ups and downs of feeling exactly how he felt. You know, sometimes you just need to hear that. Sometimes you need that little extra little push to understand that it's okay to go try it out. And sometimes when you try it out, you may not feel it right away. And that's okay, too. You know, just take your time with it and feel your way into it. So just me having a respect and a love for him, I felt like it was my job just to try to help him out the best way I can.
But explain to me what it is about athleticism, about masculinity, that makes it hard to ask for help.
I think that's the stigma that we're trying to break now, is just being men. You know, I feel like when you grow up, you always taught to be tough. You always taught to, you know, not cry, to suck it up, not complain, you know. No matter how hard or difficult something is, you're not supposed to have feelings. And I think it's something that's embedded at an early age that kind of, you know, you feel like when you go through life and you deal with so much, you're still supposed to have that same type of mindset. And, you know, that's not right. You know, and I think us having those conversations, trying to break that stigma, is something that stemmed from, you know, when we was younger, just being men, always having to be tough.
Well, how did that work out for you? I mean, nobody questions your toughness. You emerged from Compton and felt how when you're being told by everybody that you're tough and yet you can't quite identify why you're depressed?
Yeah, I mean, it took for me to be 26 years old to really just stop caring about, you know, if somebody knew I was sad or or I was in a dark place, or I felt down, or I felt alone. You know, I remember having a conversation with myself saying, man, I've been through so much. I made it out of Compton, California. I've seen the worst of the worst. I can never feel less than myself. And it took for me to be 25, 26 years old to realize that. And, you know, sometimes it takes time for you to get to that point to understand, like, you know, I shouldn't feel less than the individual because I understand all the things that I've been through and how can I be better going forward.
Can we walk through some of the details of that? Because I feel like you're hiding quite a bit under the umbrella of I've been through a lot. Would it not stand to reason, whatever that is by your definition, that you would have some post-traumatic stress disorder at 25 that makes it too much to bear?
Yeah, I just, you know, you work so hard coming, trying to make it out the urban community that you sweep so much stuff under the rug. You know, I lost, you know, a couple of my best friends to gang violence before I was even out of high school. You know, I lost, you know, uncles, I lost family members to gang violence. You know, it was a point in my life where I went to countless funerals before I was 16 years old. You know, seeing things and going through so much of that, you really don't realize how much it takes a toll on you emotionally and mentally to later down a line when your whole goal is to make it out of that environment, you know, and in the same token, you're running away from so many emotions that you're leaving behind. And sometimes those same emotions will catch up to you at some point. And for me, that's what it was. You know, you start to see, you know, you see so much of the good that life had to offer you, and forgetting how much of the bad that you went through at a young age too. And those two dynamics kind of, you know, collided with one another and kind of put me in a, you know, a tricky place that I had to fight through and understand how could I be better and not hide these feelings that I was carrying for so long.
Are you talking about avoiding grief? Are you talking about not having any idea what to do with, I love this person and now they're dead, I'm a teenager, what the hell, how is this my life?
Grief, survivor's remorse, you know, growing and leaving people that you grew up from day one behind because maybe they had different, you know, thought process on how life should go. I grew up having a big family, big friend, a huge community of friends. And, you know, when the separation started to happen, you deal with so much grief that you leave behind, so much, you know, sadness, so much stuff that was never addressed. Because, you know, for me, I had one goal and that was to make it out. And you realize once you make it out, how much stuff you left behind, so much stuff you didn't address, that kind of takes a toll on you, you know, and especially with me coming from two different worlds, been in the lead for so long, seeing so much of the positive that it has to bring, but also not addressing so much of the negative stuff that I had went through, you know, it took a toll.
When you say survivor's remorse, how and when did you identify any of that? How and when did that have a name for you?
I always felt it. You know, I think the title really made those feelings come to light, you know, because it was always those feelings of feeling bad for, you know, losing a friend, knowing, you know, you gotta face that friend's family, talk to them, see the sadness in them, and, you know, feeling hurt and even worse, knowing that someone you was close to, you have to see their family grieve, you know, and sometimes they make you don't want to come around or even bring it up because, you know, it felt like it's just opening up another wound. So it was always a challenge for me trying to just find what exactly those emotions was for me and just try to figure it out so I don't consistently be in these dark places and not know why.
Can you explain to me sort of where and when and how? Maybe this doesn't happen as an illumination, but you're looking around at your life and you know, I've overcome all the odds. I should and do have great gratitude for the fact that I've arrived at some place other people cannot possibly dream of. And yet I am here in my hotel room or whatever, and I'm not happy. I've got nothing but shit feelings on me. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, how did that reveal itself to you?
Man, just some days you out the blue, you find yourself just being frustrated, mad, angry, having animosity towards people that didn't even do anything to you, you know, starting to, you know, have these doubts for no reason, these unwarranted aggressions, these moments where the smallest thing will get you out your character. And those feelings used to happen so much, and it used to make me even more mad because I'm sitting there like, why the hell am I mad? Nobody said nothing to me wrong. Nobody did nothing to me wrong. But you have these built up frustrations, this animosity, you know, this pushback, you know, you pushing people away, you know, just everything negative for no reason. And the more frequent that happened, the more, you know, I had to look at myself and address so much. And, you know, it's still a challenge for me to this day. You know, it's something that I haven't completely been able to figure out. But, you know, when I have those feelings now, I try to combat them with something positive and don't let it bleed over and make it worse for me in any other type of life.
So your behavior, you didn't recognize it?
No, not at all. I didn't recognize it, didn't see it. And you look back and, you know, you got to apologize to the ones that you may have said something to or may have gave off an aggressive nature towards because you going through something unknowingly and taking it out on the next person. So I definitely didn't see that.
Is it pushing stuff down for so many years, not even having time for it? Because to get ahead in your game, you had to be obsessive compulsive, lopsided, no time to examine anything. And then all of a sudden it's coming out as anger and you don't recognize anger because why am I angry?
That's exactly what it is. You know, I think people don't understand. We growing up the way I grew up, you only way you know how to deal with aggression was with aggression, you know, and sometimes that aggression played, you know, a good part when it came to sports and it came to, you know, channeling that energy to something positive. But sometimes when you don't realize where you're challenging that energy towards, it comes out wrong. You know, it comes out aggressive towards people who doesn't deserve it. And it's a hard feeling because you carry so much weight, so much animosity, so many burdens on you that you haven't addressed that cause these feelings to occur. And it's not fair to you. It's not fair to the ones that try to be there for you, to help you. And, you know, it's hard to see when people really are there for you, but you're dealing with so much aggressive and so much negativity on you that you take it out on them.
Can you walk us through here? Because these guys are dying to talk basketball with you. Because I will tell the people again, Dinners with DeMar, it features interviews with Draymond Green, Dwayne Wade, Damian Lillard. It's a new series about mental health, and I don't think people understand the daily stresses that you guys are under. But can you help people understand without incriminating anybody, the difficulties that came with money appearing for you in your life, you get out and now people expect your help for things. And these are people that you love. And these are people that you do not want to say no to, but you don't know how to handle your finances. You don't know how to handle wealth. You don't know how to handle boundaries. Can you give me some general ideas of how difficult that transition is?
Man, the word entitlement is a real thing. You know, and I don't think many people really understand the significance of the word entitlement. You know, just because someone knew you at the age of 15, your success is their success for some odd reason. You know, even if they felt like, you know, they walk with you to school or they sit in the same classroom with you or family members feeling like, you know, we family, they deserve the exact same thing you have. And you know, if it's one person thinking like that, imagine the family members and other people and the friends that feel that way. And the entitlement thing really takes a toll on a lot of people in our league because, you know, you don't want to let down family and friends, but family and friends don't put in consideration that they're not the only one asking for something or needing something or putting their problems on us. Where, you know, we still trying to figure it out. You know, we work so hard to try to do better for ourselves and we all want to help and want to be there for our friends and family. But sometimes it becomes overbearing when the entitlement, you know, the entitlement get played on us because people really don't understand what it's like for us, how lonely it is, how frustrating, how much we got to give to this game, that it takes a toll. You know, so I think entitlement is definitely one of the main causes of this whole thing.
Nobody wants to hear it, though, right? Nobody wants to hear, hey, DeMar's lonely. right? Like it's what do you mean? DeMar's got the life we all want. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Prime example is just like I seen Dame, you know, said the other day he was, you know, he really don't have a life, and you see so many people saying, "How can you not have a life? You're making X amount of money every single day," and it's like we human at the end of the day. It's like a quote I read from Jim Carrey before was, you know, he wished he had everybody. He wished everybody in the world could experience being rich so they will know and understand that money isn't everything, you know, and it's not. Like, money don't solve problems. If anything, money will bring more problems. You know, yes, money makes so much stuff easier for you in your life to be able to live comfortably, but that don't take away or from all the stresses that it brings, you know, and it's hard, you know. It's a tough life. You know, especially when you give your all into the game and you really care and you don't get caught up in materialistic things. You know, you realize money isn't everything. Money just brings more problems that you got to understand how to cipher through those problems that gives you more of a headache.
I understand exactly what you're saying. And yet when you counter my, you know, I'm saying to you, no one wants to hear DeMar's lonely. No one wants to hear DeMar say either that money brings as many problems as it solves.
Right.
But
right.
you're just telling people, just asking people to understand that if you're depressed or if a loved one has had their heart broken or if you're grieving, I'm not sure where money's helping there or how money's helping too much there.
For sure, because, you know, like you said, the entitlement going to kick in because the next person not going to care about if you're feeling lonely, if you're going through something personally or how your day went because they hold this thing over you like, oh, you're making all this money. You shouldn't have no problems. If I had this, I gladly do. You know, it's all you always hear those stories because, you know, people are so insensitive when it's a dollar sign in front of the main person, and it's not fair at all, you know. And I think that's when empathy come into play, you know. And I feel we lack so much of that because we prejudge people that we see on TV because we think they have it all, we think they have a great life, we think they live in a dream, you know. And it's so tricky because we live in a time where you look at social media and people live a lie so quick, and it's not fair, you know. We prejudge by so much false perception of the world we live in that people just take it out on you because they have less than.
Score major comfort with the new Hanes Originals Super Soft Styles. Imagine this. Fabric so soft, it feels like you're practically wearing nothing. Now that's next level softness. Whether you're storming the court, conquering the workday, or just chilling on the couch, Hanes Original Super Soft Styles have you covered, literally, in soft, cooling comfort. And let's not forget the style. These sleek designs and colors won't just keep you feeling great, they'll have you looking like a champion. So ditch the discomfort and upgrade your game with the new Hanes Original Super Soft Styles. They're soft, they're cooling, they're everything. Try Hanes softest fabric ever at hanes.com/originals. Use discount code DANLB20.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Don Levitard.
We got Afrini Hardaway.
Afrini? Who was Afrini Hardaway?
I was trying to read fast. UD was on the team. Luke Jackson. Bobby Jones. The Matrix, Sean Marion.
Stugatz.
Zoe, Shaq, Smush Parker. Chris Quinn.
Wait a minute.
D Wade.
Wait a minute.
Jason Williams, they're all right. I mean, stacked roster.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
DeMar, I just want to do a little mid-interview check on you here, because Dan will do this the entire time.
If you don't stop
for several months, like, I will keep talking.
A vulnerable, honest athlete is catnip.
What? The rarest of what?
Everything he loves.
A vulnerable, honest athlete willing to talk about his feelings. DeMar DeRozan, I'm willing to start a live stream with you from right now until the end of time, where we will just talk about this. But instead, you'll have to take it in doses because he plays basketball. Dinners with DeMar is where you'll get it. But go ahead, get your basketball questions in. I know Tony puts you top where on bucket getters all time.
He's in the top 10 bucket getters of all time. DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm gonna get
your top 5 bucket getters very soon. But I have a quick fire question for you. Deeper Kobe bag, you or PJ?
Me. Kobe? Strictly Kobe's? Me.
Yeah, strictly Kobe's.
Shoes, PJ. Yes. But strictly Kobe's, me.
Wow. What's your favorite pair?
My favorite pairs probably is so tricky. Probably the ones where it all started. Kobe ones my favorite.
Really? I'm an eights guy.
Eights. You can't go wrong. Yeah, eights. Eights for sure. But I think for me, where it all started is the Kobe ones for sure.
Give me your top 5 bucket getters. Now, we have some parameters for these bucket getters. You can't say Michael. You can't say LeBron. It's got to be guys that when you think of, you need to get a bucket right now.
Are we talking just mid-range?
No, we're talking everything. Complete game.
Everything.
But that's the implication.
Everything. Who do you think of? Top 5 guys.
If I may, just real quick, because I've got follow-up questions on just sneakers, because I'm curious who he regards as in the league. I don't know that anybody looks at somebody else and is envious of their collection.
Dude, PJ Tucker. He's a demigod in this game.
Yeah, PJ, you got to, as far as being a sneaker king, that's PJ. PJ got it. He ain't nobody touching him when it comes to complete just shoes, because to this day, the amount of shoes, like, it's been times he FaceTime me from a house where he don't even live in, and it's just nothing but shoes, wall to wall, ceiling to ceiling, just to show me certain shoes,
like warehouses, storage,
like,
who's
second place?
Like, literally a house that's just no furniture. It's just shoes. Kitchen full of shoes. Stairway full of shoes.
He's got a trap house for shoes? Is that what you're telling me?
Shoes in the sink?
Sounds like he's a hoarder.
And no, but it looked like a museum. Like, I promise you. Like, he will tell you it's the craziest thing he ever showed.
He's a caretaker of the shoe game, no doubt.
Who's the guy in the NBA that is trying to come for his stuff? Like, no, I'm the guy. Like, no one knows about my shoe collection.
I don't know. I haven't seen nobody. Like, how extreme PJ is with the shoes, I don't think it's nobody else, because it's been like that since I've been in the league with PJ.
Joe Johnson had a retinal scan to get into his areas, his warehouse areas. Only he could get into his warehouse areas. There's no even urban legend of somebody being better than PJ Tucker.
Nah, not nobody. Because even with Joe was a Jordan guy. So Joe had all the Jordans. Like, PJ has everything Nike and everything Jordan. Like, it's not just one specific. You have all the LeBrons, all the Kobe's, all the KD's, all the Kyrie's, all the any Gary Payton's, any athlete Steph that Curry's. Played in the Nike shoe, even Steph, when Steph was with Nike, he has those. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he has every Nike shoe you could think of. It's incredible.
I want to get back to the mid-range game stuff, but can you just tell me, or bucket getter stuff, excuse me. I've got word association in the head. But Grant Williams, when he goes from Luka sneakers in Dallas to Tatum sneakers in Dallas, what kind of offense is that?
Somebody told me that one day, and I didn't believe it. So that's a real thing.
Well, it is indeed a real thing. And he was trying to do a thing, Dan. It was pretty obvious.
I don't know if he was trying to make it a thing, but I love it. I mean, I love it. It's entertaining to me.
All right, bucket getters. Who do you have for us? All time. You're going all time, right, Tony? You're going all time.
All time. And you said I can't use Kobe or Mike?
Right. No. You got to give me bucket getters.
Yeah.
Not legends. Not legends of the game. I need bucket getters.
KD, can I put KD?
You could put KD.
But that's a legend of the game.
Yeah.
That's a little high.
But it's a bucket getter.
That's okay.
It's a little tough.
Like,
You can't be on Mount Rushmore and on this bucket.
Like Jay Crossover. Like that's what I'm thinking of. Jay Crossover.
Well, this is what you're doing though. You're privately you're offending DeMar by saying he's not KD, by saying he's not Jordan.
No, you are doing that. We are very clearly trying to say, like, there's a level of greatness. It's all implied. Yeah, you're all time great. You might end up on some Mount Rushmores. That's not what we're looking for here. We're looking for the
just bucket getters, yes, like Michael Beasley.
Great,
thank you.
So no legends. All right, let me see.
Yeah, like mainly role players, essentially.
But before we even do this, hold on, DeMar.
This whole
thing was born of me telling these guys they weren't real hoopers. They didn't really know about Mike Beasley and how he could give anybody a bucket anywhere.
Yeah, me and Tony, we both know basketball.
Yeah, I mean, Mike don't get enough credit for being one of the most dominant college players of all time. Like. So I definitely get your point of view with that. Let me hear your top five so I know what to go off.
That's what Tony wanted.
I won't pick nobody from your top five. Let me hear your top five.
Yeah, he wants more parameters.
He wants some archetypes that he can have.
Okay, so we need Jamal Crawford is on there for sure. Michael Beasley for sure. I don't have my list with me. Michael Redd.
Bucket getter.
Yeah, he's more of a
bucket getter.
More of a sniper.
You know what? You not having him turning it on you. And,
I know he did. He can't even.
You not having a top. Your top five is
what about
empty.
Playoff Gary Neal?
Oh, yeah. All right.
Playoff all right. Gary Neal. Special.
What's happening?
All right, I got a bucket. All right, I put Lou Will in there.
Yes,
yes. That's another one. There you go. Will. You're getting the game.
That's
how is he Lou better Will. Than playoff Gary Neal?
That's how you play. Lou Williams at the top. This should be the Lou Williams Memorial Bucket Getter list.
Oh, even playoff Patty Mills.
Jamal Crawford's got some words.
What about playoff Patty Mills?
Lou Will, Jamal Crawford. I'm putting Nick Young up there.
Okay. Yeah,
oh, really?
That's why that's okay. One.
Wow. Yeah,
that's how you play the game.
One. All right.
He knows how to play the game. Yeah. Yes. This is exactly how you play the game.
Let's see.
Swaggy's going to love being on this.
Lou Will,
list.
Nick Young. Who I say? I say Lou Will.
Jamal Crawford.
And Swaggy.
Jamal Crawford. Straight Buck again. This is a good one. This is a good one.
Thank you.
I want to make sure my list is good. Oh, that's a good one.
Deion Waiters.
Deion Waiters? Deion Waiters is a bucket getter. I don't know if he's top
God.
Five.
Yeah, Deion Waiters.
Yeah.
Now we're just playing
he's
the game for
it.
Yeah. No. All right, let me make sure I get this last one. Deion is a good one. Oh, my God. Let's see the last one. I'm trying to – do I want to go old school?
He's got a new series about mental health on his YouTube channel. I'm just giving him filibuster time to think. It's called Dinners with DeMar. It features interviews with Draymond Green, Dwayne Wade, Damian Lillard, and more. DeMar DeRozan is here ready to close out this segment with his fifth top five bucket getter of all time.
Oh, my God. This is a good one, man. Oh, I know I'm gonna be so mad later on when other names come to my mind.
Next week you can call us every day when new names come.
Nick up. Van Exel,
Monte Ellis,
Monte.
Oh,
Ellis.
Monte.
Marcus Thornton.
Come on.
Yeah, Monte. Thank you for helping me.
This is not how we do it.
This is not how the game is played.
What size do you wear tomorrow? I'm gonna throw you some shoes. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Hey, three. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Like, you, Tony, me. We all know who.
Yeah, you three.
We're great at it.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Thanks, DeMar.
Appreciate you.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.